Hello and welcome to Pardes from Jerusalem, the podcast series from the Pardes Institute of Jewish Studies in Jerusalem. I'm Larry Kluger, a Pardes alum. This episode is on Sukkot. A personal note, I urge you, if you haven't done it before, to build a sukkah this year for yourself and your family. There are few things better than building your own small place for you to have dinner and the other meals in, to sleep in if you wish, all for a temporary period of a week or 8 days. It is really a tremendous mitzvah, and I urge you to try it out. If you're not so handy with making your own sukkah, there are plenty of sukkah kits available. You can order them now before Yom Kippur, and it'll be waiting for you to put up in your backyard or in your driveway. And friends of mine have built them for the first time, and they also had a wonderful experience in doing it for that Sukkot and for others to follow. As I mentioned, this episode is on Sukkot. It's by Rabbi Daniel Landes. Rabbi Landes is the director of the Pardes Institute. And now, Rabbi Daniel Landes.
Thank you, Larry. We now leave the severe asceticism, the near-death experience of Yom Kippur, and enter the seizing of life, the seizing of nature, of Sukkot. At the center of Sukkot is the sukkah. Let's talk about that for a while. That's really what I want to refer to. I remember hearing some shiurim when I was a young Torah student from Rabbi Chaim Pardes, no relationship to Pardes itself, and some of the things he taught, perhaps. And regarding this holiday, this sukkah, which we immediately become very concerned about, we'll be concerned about its definition, which gives us one of the themes of the holiday. Sukkot teshvu shivat yamim, the Talmud quotes the Torah. In Sukkot you shall dwell for 7 days. The Torah says, kol shivat yamim, all 7 days. The Talmud in Sukkah, right at the very beginning, says, say mi dirat keva v'shev b'dirat arai, leave your permanent dwelling, go in and dwell in this impermanent, arai, this impermanent dwelling. And the Talmud there says, well, you know, that sukkah can't be more than 20 amot. Let's say about a little more than 20 feet. Because when you get to 20 amot, that's an impermanent dwelling. But once you hit 20 amot, that's pretty permanent. A well-known synagogue, local synagogue in my neighborhood in Jerusalem, where I was living at the time, which beautiful synagogue, did major shiputzim, renovations of its sanctuary, a traditional synagogue. Beautiful renovations, inappropriate renovations. And they had kind of the Chanukah Tabayit, the dedication celebrations went on during the holidays, which includes Sukkah, and they went out to the Sukkah. And everyone noticed, yeah, this Sukkah, in the spirit and the great intentions of the building efforts that were done, the Sukkah was made well over 20 amot. So here they are on the first day of Sukkah, ready to have a massive kiddush, and the sukkah is not kosher because the sukkah was infected, strong word, but was infected by the notion of permanence, and a sukkah cannot have that permanence, and being so high does not allow it. So therefore, the definition of the sukkah in its very tochen, its very content, is a place that is a oxymoron, a self-contradiction, a dwelling place that's an impermanent dwelling place. This leads us to a different halacha, which continues this this theme. the Shulchan Aruch of Or Chaim, you look at Tov Reish Lamed Aleph, 631, towards the end of the Shulchan Aruch and Or Chaim. Or Chaim deals with basic ritual laws, holiday laws, religious laws, as it were. In Seif Gimel, subsection 3, the author of Yosef Cairo says, the way of the sichuch, the derech ha-sichuch, the way of the layering of the top, referring to the thickness of the schacha, the thickness of the covering that you put on the sukkah, liyot kal, it must be light, in order that you should be able to see large stars. From within the sukkah, you can look out and see large stars. If it turns out to be thick, almost like a house, and therefore you can't even see the stars inside, it's nonetheless it's kosher. And the Vilna Gaon is very careful to say that this is a proper halacha, both in the Babylonian and the Jerusalem Talmuds. What's the reasoning of this halacha? Well, because we really want a sukkah that not be very thick. I mean, by sukkah, I refer to the schach, the covering. Because it's very thick, then it's no different than a house. Therefore, you haven't changed the experience. In the end, even though it's thick, you can't really see the star. Nonetheless, it's kosher because, after all, it's an impermanent layering on top. We're not talking about it being tied tightly together and bound tightly to the mainframe, to the frame. So therefore, the notion of the kochavim, of being able to see the large stars, kochavim gedolim, being able to see the large stars, is very important halachically, is a what we would call a siman chitzoni, an external guide by which we can measure the sukkah. That if you really can't see the large stars from within the sukkah, then you better check to make sure it's really not that thick. It's not the condition for making it kosher, but it's a sign by which we can measure whether or not we may be making a mistake and making it too thick. So therefore, we really want to be able to at least have the potential in a clear night, in a non-foggy and non-smoggy, in a clean environment, to have a sukkah that we're able to see what we're supposed to see. And this, of course, means that it's a dirat arai. The walls can be quite permanent. The walls can be quite thick, but the top of the sukkah, the schach, is what gives it its definition. That's really the case. And therefore, that makes it dirat arai. That makes it an impermanent dwelling. And this is very different, in a certain sense, from our original situation that we have with Avram Avinu. When Avram Avinu, Avram, our forefather, was taken out and asked by God to count the stars. And God said, so shall be your seed. Habetna hashamayma. Look now towards the heaven. Actually, Rashi says he took him out and says, and according to the Midrashic, the fanciful interpretation, God takes him out and places him above the stars, above the stars, and says, leave any notion you have of fortune-telling, istagniyut. Leave your fortune-telling, whatever you saw in the constellations, that you will not have a son. No, that's not true. Well, God says, actually, according to Rashi, it's technically true. Avram will not have a son, but Abraham will. Sarai will not give birth, but Sarah will. In other words, once they have this covenantal frame, they'll give birth. And therefore, by giving them by a new name, their fortune, their mazel, changes. So Abram is allowed to see a larger vision because he becomes transformed and he becomes an Abraham. Sarai is able to see a greater vision, even though she laughs even at the notion that she could give birth, but she will become Sarah with the addition of the hay of God's name into their name. Is this part of what's happening within the sukkah? Is the sukkah a transition vehicle for us then we're able to see the star and we're able to move through our temporary nature, through our creatureliness. They're able to see a larger vision. They were actually able to grasp eternity through the very experience of going through a limited, temporary, very constricted existence. Remember back in Los Angeles, we put up a pretty heavy frame for the sukkah. It didn't need to be so heavy in Los Angeles, but as my wife pointed out, Cheryl pointed out, then I was still thinking about Chicago type of sukkahs in which you really need a pretty strong, you need a pretty strong frame. And at the end of Sukkot, and when we would come and take the sukkah down, we would look and we would see the mark that it had made on the asphalt of our backyard, the garage area. And it was a mark, you know, because it was there for number of days, right? At least 7 days, 8 days in the galut, even more. And it was there, and once you took it away, you had the outline of what it was. We always were shocked to see how, in fact, it was a very small area. But once we were inside the sukkah, and you've had this experience, all of you who are listening, but once you're inside the sukkah, as crowded as it is, as constricted as it is, and you look up and you can see the star, or you think you can see the star, after a while, the sukkah gets larger and larger and larger. A transition has taken place. We're able to see through. I think this is how Jewish practice, Jewish law goes. We take ourselves through experiences, and we are transformed. We go from our finitude. We go for our limited nature. We put ourselves and we declare ourselves in a temporary existence, and we go much further, and we're able to see something much higher. We're able to see the star. We're able to see above the star. We're able then to look down, as it were, onto the star itself and to say, you know what? There's something great happening here. And therefore, there's one more piece of Torah that I want to mention, and that is the Talmud, the Yerushalmi, the Jerusalem Talmud, in the Tractate Sukkah, Chapter 2, Halacha 10. It says the following: Ein teshvu ela taduru. That when we say in the Torah, you're supposed to dwell in the sukkah. It really is teshvu. It's taduru. It means really, really dwelling. And in fact, that same word teshvu is used in reference to Eretz Yisrael. V'yirashtem otam v'yishavtem ba. It says about coming to the land of Israel, and you shall inherit it, and you shall dwell there, meaning a very strong dwelling. Many interpretations, but I think the best way to understand it today is that we're supposed to dwell in our finite nature within the sukkah and hold on to it and experience it completely and not be distracted by anything else. And to know that's where we are. It's actually part of our strength. I'm reminded famous story of the Chafetz Chaim, Israel Meir HaKohen Kagan, the beloved spiritual leader of European Jewry, great halachicist, great moralist. More than that, I had an uncle who studied with him, the great, great paragon of humility and piety. He lived in Rada in a small city, but had a train station. A wealthy man comes, wants to do something for the Chafetz Chaim. He's called the Chafetz Chaim. Israel Meir HaKohen, the name of his book, He Who Desires Life. It's a good name for Sukkot. Who's the person who desires life? If you desire life, then you're going to act in a moral and sensitive nature, in sensitive way. That's the Chafetz Chaim. That's the desire of life. And he visits the Chafetz Chaim at his house, and he's appalled, lowly, ascetic, cramped nature of the Chafetz Chaim's dwelling place. No furniture. Goes to the local carpenter, arranges for furniture, things that are already made and a couple things to be installed. And being the wealthy man and being a good businessman, he just has it done. And he comes back to visit the Chafetz Chaim on a subsequent trip. He sees it and he goes to the house, sees none of it's there, and finds out from the Rebbetzin that the Chafetz Chaim was happy with the gift and immediately gave it away to people that really needed it. He goes back to, he's angry, he's upset. The Rebbetzin saw that. He goes back to his inn. The wealthy man goes back to the inn to mull this over and to lick his wounds. Here he tried to do something right, and he's kind of like, he's insulted. Insulted by the man who's supposed to insult nobody. Here's a knock on his door. Turns out to be the great Rabbi Kagan himself. He's at the door, lets him in. Rabbi Kagan looks around, and the wealthy man says, "What are you looking at, my rabbi?" "I'm looking at your room here that you've taken. I see that there's really nothing here. You have a bed, you have a chair, and that's it. Where's the furniture? Where's the chests? Where's..." The wealthy man says, "Look, I understand you. I see the point you're trying to make. But, Rabbi, it's not comparable at all. In my case, I'm only a temporary visitor here." And Rabbi Kagan, all 4 feet, 10 of him, looks this large, wealthy man in the face and with a stare and with a smile says, "I'm also a temporary visitor." What strength the Jewish people have taken from being temporary visitors, of knowing that one can grasp finitude and at the same time transform themselves to eternity. This notion of the limited becoming the infinite, of the transformational notion of looking towards the star and above the star to put yourself into the hands of God. Rashi has that image in the section I had quoted. To put yourself into the palm, God's palm, and to stare out. That is really our strength, and that gives us joy. When we look back at our sukkah at the end, we'll say, "Oh, what a small sukkah, but we saw the star." We'll say, "What a small sukkah, but we really became something within our sukkah." I wish you all a sukkot of joy, of happiness, of love, of finitude that becomes infinity.
Thank you, Rabbi Landes. Thanks for tuning in, and we'll see you in the next episode of Pardes from Jerusalem.